This is Worse Odds, a Star Wars prequel trilogy, Star Wars Legends fanfic, written by Mnaei and read by Raina Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairing Alpha 17 Obi-Wan Kenobi, with additional tags for major character death, alternate universe time travel, not a fix-it, possessive behavior, dark. Alpha 17 sees some problems and decides murder is the answer. One shot. Gift fic. Dubious consent due to assumed identities. Author's notes. For KJ Fayburn. Written for Faye in exchange for an absolutely beautiful Cody Wan fic. I hope this comes even a little close to being that good of a read. Alpha 17 died with the Force collapsing his trachea. The scalp blade managed to grab buried too deep in Ventress's gut for her to survive long after him. It was not necessarily a good death, but it was a death he couldn't regret. His last moments were still fantasies of the could-have-beens that he'd never know. The lips he'd never been brave enough to kiss. The hands he'd never been able to hold outside of hospital tents. Then they were of his last good memories. Of Obi-Wan's calloused hand gently resting on his forehead, his bright eyes wide with concern as he ordered him to medical treatment on Coruscant, having to use all of his authority to get some clone that sort of attention. He, of course, hadn't expected to wake up. Battered, tired, in just his blacks, but alive. Not a single trace of the Force choke that had killed him hindering his throat. He was too paranoid to try his calm, just all a poncho of a passed-out drunk in an alley or whatever sand-drenched backwater he was on, and did his best to blend in, get a feel for things. A lot could happen in a short period of time, and he had no idea how long he'd been out of it, or why he'd been dumped like he was in this particular town. First, he stole a blaster to hide under his poncho, a vibro knife to sheath in his boot. Then he looked for information, figuring credits would be his next stop when he figured out what section of the galaxy he was even in. Apparently, which side of the war the planet was on wouldn't be an issue. Unless he was hallucinating. But it was a criffing weird thing to hallucinate ending up on Tatooine nearly a decade before he'd been decanted. Even for him. ...7938 CRC was a weird year, Alpha 17 decided. All the major battles came before or after it, with the only conflict of note, and conflicts were what most of his original education was on, the ongoing civil war in the Mandalore sector. What he could find on the Holonet. Thankfully, it hadn't evolved much in the years before the war. Only confirmed that. It was a boring year. The sort of boring Alpha 17 might have talked about as blissful when he was only imagining it. But he wasn't going to get to enjoy it. This would be the year his general was there in the midst of Mandalore's conflict, sniffing after the Duchess. His general, who was definitely alive, and as well as he could probably be, considering. A Padawan, of all things. Some shiny running around after a general who, by all reports, was worse than Kenobi and Skywalker put together. Thinking of that, thinking of Mandalore, gave him an idea. First, he just needed to steal enough credits in a ship to get off Skywalker's least favorite dust ball. He staked out Galadron for 2 months before the hit happened. The governor dead, some suit of armor he was keeping in his hideous mansion, the only thing missing. Easy in, easy out, from the home of a man who didn't think he had many enemies left. Jango left a trail. Not enough for the useless security guards to find, but more than enough for someone a better, more experienced Django had taught. He followed him straight back to the clunker he was flying, and got the drop on him with pathetic ease. Two high-powered stun bolts and just the right joint of the Beskar guy made hastily shoved on, and Fett was down for the count. The first thing Alpha 17 did was strip him. The second thing he did was tie him up in a way he'd have to seriously injure himself to get out of. Then he studied the younger Jango Fett, taking a moment to really think through what he was doing. They were nearly the same age. Well, the same physical age. Jango had less muscle, still gaining it back from his time as a slave, if the rumor mill among the Kuli Valdar was to be trusted. Alpha 17 had more scars, but who wouldn't expect Jango to come out of the Osak he went through without some permanent reminders? In the months since Alpha 17 had come back, his hair had grown out from the military regulation cut, but it looked like Jango had already trimmed his own hair back, so that was no issue. All he needed to do was talk for a little while. Let Alpha 17 learn him. When Jango woke up, that's exactly what he did. No doubt at least part of it was connected to that feral look in his eyes, that doubt that maybe all this spice he'd been forced to work with had long-term effects, and he was hallucinating someone that looked like him, sounded like him, picked up more and more of his accent and mannerisms as the hours went on. Eventually, dehydration and sleep deprivation added to that, and it seemed like he thought Alpha 17 was some spirit sent from the Manda to punish him for some perceived sins. Towards the end, he could only mutter apologies to Jaster and a string of others and choked out Mandoa, wrung out of tears. By the time Alpha 17 put a bolt right between his template's eyes, he felt his new knowledge and what he'd already known would serve him more than enough. And any guilt he might have felt had disappeared when he realized he was doing little more than putting a rabbit's thrill down. He spaced the body, and despite Mandaim and Obi-Wan pulling at his heart, headed to conquer Dawn. Rounding up the hot Mandawade went like this. Find some of the Kuu Valdar he knew had been members or connected to members. Pretend to be Fett, recovered from years of slavery. See who would answer their Mandalore's call. Convincing them he was still worth following was even easier, and began and ended with Tor Vizsla beheaded with his own lightsaber. Sparring with Obi-Wan always had a tendency to pay off in the least expected ways. Some choice words to Death Watch, that they'd ever given Jango a problem, made his estimates of the man go even further down. Had them forgetting why they ever had an issue with Fett in the first place. He'd led troops before, but that didn't have the same weight as this. Of watching Mandalorians kneeling before him, rededicating themselves to the Res Al Nare, declaring him, well, Jango Fett, but that was who he was now, the Mandalore. As a lesser man, he might have let it go to his head. Instead, he stayed all business, focusing on plotting with the best of his new soldiers to take back Mandaim. Took back the whole Criven sector, eventually. Then, finally, he could hunt down his general. Alpha 17 was pretending to be Jango Fett, pretending to want peace with the new Mandalorians, pretending to protect Satine Kryze from the Death Watch, even though they were now under his control. He couldn't even be sincere in his regard for Padawan Obi-Wan Kenobi, because being nice to a Jedi would be suspicious. Sometimes he fantasized about drugging Obi-Wan, slitting Kreese's throat, and taking his little general off somewhere no one would find them. Other times, he remembered how wily his general had been, and thought of the signs of that he'd already seen in the 18-year-old version of him. He knew the long game was the only one he could play. Django was not a permanent fixture. He hopped in and out of their lives, ever claiming to be on the trail of Death Watch or some other enemy. He randomized it as much as he could, not wanting to give anything away. Getting rid of Jin and his incessant lectures against attachment was the first step in this part of the plan. It also proved to be surprisingly difficult, even though he tried every time he reappeared to the group. If Alpha 17 didn't know just how good his shielding was, he'd suspect the Jedi Master knew what he was up to. Maybe it was the living force Osek he kept going on about to Obi-Wan, or maybe it was pure luck, but the man proved difficult to kill. Alpha 17, though, had faced worse odds. They'd split up during an attack, Jin and Django making themselves more obvious targets so Obi-Wan could get Satine out of the way. He fought back. Of course, the commandos going against them knew the plan. The plan he'd told them. That they had to carefully get rid of the older Jedi and the Duchess to avoid Republic retaliation before hitting the new Mandalorians where it would really hurt. And the risks. He'd fought Force Sensitives before. He knew how key distractions were, and mindset. Over and over as Death Watch shot at them, he thought, I'm protecting Obi-Wan, with complete sincerity. As he turned his blaster on Jin. As he shot him, again and again, just to be safe. His smoking body was caught in an explosion soon after. No trace would remain that he'd been very clearly shot in the back at close range. Obi-Wan had felt the death through his training bond. He didn't even have to say anything to make that clear. He'd still helped Alpha 17 escape with Satine, deflecting blaster bolts as he covered their backs. Then he spent a day barely responsive once they were out of danger, moving like some automaton at their direction. The Duchess couldn't handle it, of course. Couldn't handle thinking of one of her protectors as a person with the same sort of feelings as she had. And it fell on Alpha 17 to take care of him. After 2 months of knowing him in this time, he decided he could be more forward. "It's all right, Obika," he whispered to him, pulling him into his arms and rocking him as he might have one of his batchmates during a bad growth spurt. "It's not. My master is dead. What am I supposed to do?" Obi-Wan turned his head into Alpha 17's chest without prompting, clinging onto him like he might disappear too. Stroking his hair, Alpha 17 took a moment to catalog all of the moment, to store it away in his near-perfect memory. "You carry on. That's all you can do when you lose your family." Not that Fett had done much of that, but Obi-Wan didn't know that. He thought Fett was trying to rebuild, to make a better Mandalore for his people. In this world, or timeline, or whatever Alpha 17 was supposed to call it, no one would ever know Fett for the failure he was. They went back and forth like that for hours, Alpha 17 murmuring gentle assurances, Obi-Wan soaking them up. He'd wanted to do this dozens of times with his general, but while that exact man would never exist, there was enough of him in this Obi-Wan to satisfy. With Jin dead, they were stretched thinner. It was easy enough to get Obi-Wan to leave Satine in Jango's care. He couldn't do anything to her yet, because if she died under Obi-Wan's protection, and especially when he wasn't even there, he'd blame himself. What Alva 17 could do was convince Satine that she wanted to stop running around with just a Jedi Padawan as her main source of protection. That she should return to Sundari and her own guards, her own people. Obi-Wan tried to argue against it, but by that point her mind was set, and she was too stubborn to dissuade. "How can I speak of peace without being willing to live a peaceful life? It looks hypocritical to have you or Fett fighting for me as you do." Hearing his words come out of her mouth, Alpha 17 had to lock down hard on his shields to keep his amusement from leaking through. "I'm returning to Sundari and taking my rightful place as the leader of Mandalore. I refuse to let Death Watch dictate what I do any longer." The explosion during her return speech took out half the palace, all of the other high-ranking new Mandalorians with her, and a chunk of the plaza they'd been in. Obi-Wan had been ordered to stay away, for appearance's sake, and was sulking on the other side of the city when it happened. No one could be surprised that the true Mandalorians, who had been speaking out against this from the start, swooped in to provide security that the new Mandalorians clearly weren't capable of. Or when Jango Fett took control in the sudden power vacuum. A brief, furious-looking mock campaign later, and Death Watch was surrendering to him, convincing even many of the new Mandalorians that perhaps he was the right choice for leader during such uncertain times. The distraction kept Obi-Wan from suggesting he return to Coruscant. The devastation of the explosion left the Order unclear as to whether Obi-Wan was even still alive. Alpha 17 possibly sent reports that suggested Obi-Wan had perished, for readers expecting a Jedi to have been with Satine, though gave no outright lies. Alpha 17 was vindicated for all his work when, used to seeking comfort from Alpha 17, Obi-Wan came directly to him first, after just a week of trying to deal with his new grief. "I don't understand. Why didn't she listen to us?" "People like Satine, they never really see people like us as equals. We're servants, no matter how close they seem to let us," Alpha 17 explained, gentle again, because Obi-Wan always deserved gentle. "With Jin," Obi-Wan bit back a helpless noise. "He was an important enough outsider, she listened. Once he was gone..." "I thought I was her friend. How could I be so wrong? I don't know what to believe anymore." Alpha 17 tilted Obi-Wan's head up, staring into his eyes. "I swear to you, Obi-Wan Kenobi, I'm your friend." His conviction brought on a new round of crying, though he thought it was more from relief than anything else. Perhaps it was wrong to kiss away those tears when he held Obi-Wan, to soothe away his grief with pleasure. But it certainly worked. The end. Reader's notes. I love it so much. This podfic was recorded on my cell phone at my desk at work. Please excuse any weird jostling noises because I definitely did start gesticulating wildly as recording, and I think the mic may have picked up some of the me flailing my arms, scooting my chair, and whacking the cell phone around. I've been thinking about this fic for 3 days. since recording it. I am coming back to add reader's notes to it. I love the thousands of possibilities that unroll from this universe. I also just adore this deep, dark, I'd give you the stars, I'd change the, you know, like that kind of thing. But, you know, sounds romantic until you look at it and it's like, oh, I'd give you the stars, I'd rearrange the sky for you. And it's actually, no, wait, there's a lot of thousands of hundreds of thousands of people who would die because of the sun not being there. And I don't care about the consequences of it or something. It sounded better in my head, definitely. But like, that's the thing that Alpha 17 has for Obi-Wan. And it's so good for me. Give me that deep, dark, nitty-gritty. And Alpha 17 just being like, you know what? I can be better than Fett. I can fucking be better than Fett. And the way that this universe will roll out from there, it's just so good for me. It's just so good for me. So if Fett is not there post Galadron for Dooku to approach with the bounty hunter, you know, job fair palooza that ultimately results in Fett becoming the template. The war is going to happen. The Sith have been planning towards a galaxy-wide war for multiple generations, multiple levels of master and apprentice. But if Fett's not there for Dooku to hire, and Obi-Wan's how does that work? Okay, so Alpha 17 is being Fett, and he has gone off to run Mandalore. Obi-Wan, never going to leave Mandalore. He's going to be enfolded within the community, and at that point, you know, his master is dead, and the temple didn't come looking for him, because they think he's dead. Alpha 17's not going to tell him that. But eventually, it's going to be like the people who were there for me in my trauma were the Hot Mandalade and Alpha 17. And it's not so much that Obi-Wan is leaving the Jedi Order as he is just not going back. And then it's a couple years later. And this may be a little bit of resentment that's building up, I bet. Not so much that it taints his whole worldview, but enough that it ties him closer to Alpha 17. That's definitely in Alpha 17's purview to encourage that line of thought, right? But Qui-Gon's already dead. Qui-Gon dies on Mandalore. Does this mean that Sidious starts working on Dooku? No, and that's the fan. From an earlier date because Dooku is trying to leave the temple earlier? Or does it mean that Dooku gets enwrapped further into the temple, never really leaves? I don't know, because there's like some headcanon that like basically from Galadron on, Dooku is getting Sith tempted. But like, I kind of like the idea that Sidious doubles down on Maul as his apprentice. And then if Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are not there to be asked by Valorum to intercede in Naboo, then the Naboo blockade just lasts until Naboo falls, signs the treaty, and ends up being the first example of here's the might of the Trade Federation, right? So maybe the war goes in a different direction. It's very dominoes effect of it. I don't know. Oh, I don't know, but I really love this idea of Alpha 17 being like, I'm going to eliminate the distractions so all you see is me. And thinking it's kind of like, it's not healthy, but it's fucking romantic. I love it, with a capital R. anyway, thank you for listening. Manei, I apologize if I said your username wrong. I wasn't sure if it was an MN, like silent, like Nemesine. And then, but I tried my best. Thank you for having blanket permission to Podfic. I am so into this vibe. It's not even funny. But yes, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.